Good evening. Welcome to the Planning Commission meeting for Tuesday, August 4th. It's 6 o'clock, or pretty close. To do our formal call to order, we have to acknowledge that the chair is missing from the meeting. Commissioner George is not here, but we do have three commissioners. With the consent of my two commissioners, I'll volunteer to be the acting chair for the night. Terry?
I will second that.
Commissioner Fowler Payne.
Yes.
Okay, with that detail taken care of, I'll call the meeting to order. A big gavel here. You okay? It's so rare I get to use this. I'm going to take advantage of it while I can. Roll call for attendance.
Commissioner Martin.
Here.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our next item here is the this point and deal with it right now. It's a 8B, the item, the consideration of the general plan amendment is being continued. It says to a date specific. Do we have a specific date that's where this is going to be agendized?
Yes, I'm thinking that the item be continued to the August 18th meeting as a date certain.
Okay. I'll entertain a motion to move that item to this point in the agenda, and at the same time, let's just try to do and get accept the continuance.
To ensure proper notification in accordance with the department policy regarding on-site posting.
I'll second it.
Okay, roll call, please.
Martin.
Yes. In respect, though, if there's anyone here in the public that did wish to speak tonight, there's not going to be any staff report. We're not going to be taking any action. We're not going to be doing anything else on this item. But if there is someone who'd like to speak who is here tonight that may or may not be able to come here on the 18th.
Good evening. Patty Welsh, Arroyo Grande. I would like to see this. Commissioner Keene has the most knowledge of this project, and Mr. Keene was just granted three meetings. I think somebody who has the knowledge that man has should be here on this important issue. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Anyone else wishing to speak? We'll move on to item five. This public comment period is an present issues, thoughts, or suggestions on matters not scheduled on this agenda. Comments should be limited to those matters that are within the jurisdiction of the Planning Commission. The Brown Act restricts the Commission from taking formal action on matters not published on the agenda. The Commission also requests that public comment be limited to 3 minutes and be accompanied by a voluntary submittal or a speaker slip, although we have such a big crowd here tonight, I think we could probably take care of that, to facilitate meeting organization preparation of the minutes. Is there anybody who wants to speak at this? Pass. Okay, not seeing anybody. Let's move on. Written communications. Are there any written?
Just the supplemental that you've already discussed and nothing further.
Great, thank you. The next item on here is the consent agenda on the approval of the minutes. My fellow commissioners had a chance to review the minutes of the last meeting. And have a recommendation to approve those.
To approve minutes of July 7, 2015, Planning Commission meeting.
I'll second it.
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Yes.
And Commissioner Martin?
Yes. So that passes unanimously. We'll go on now to the next. The first item, 8A, consideration of conditional use permit 15-001 to implement a project at the in the Arroyo Grande Creek in proximity to Clarence Avenue and Myrtle Drive. The applicant's a Central Coast Salmon Enhancement. Do we have a staff report for that?
Yes. Thank you, Chair Martin, members of the commission. Central Coast Salmon Enhancement has received funding from the 2014 Fisheries Restoration Grant Program administered by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife to modify an existing concrete weir spanning the width of Arroyo Grande Stanley Drive. The purpose of the project is to restore steelhead trout habitat. The need for this project has been discussed over the last decade by various agencies and nonprofit organizations. Given the numerous technical studies required to implement the project and limited funding opportunities, it took several years to assemble all of the project components. Here is a picture of the weir combined with a stream gauge is currently used to measure water level elevations and flow. The gauge consists of a tower, stream gauge equipment, stairs down to the creek, and a concrete platform across the creek channel. The area where the work will be performed is about 35 feet below the top of the bank. Although the stream gauge is important for assessing creek flows, it also functions as a migration barrier for steelhead trout. The proposed project will lower the weir, allowing fish to jump over and access 3.3 miles of critical steelhead habitat upstream. The stream gauge will remain in the to operate as before the modification. I know this is hard to read. Documentation. In summary, the project will involve accessing the site from Myrtle Street with a staging area at the top of bank directly upstream from the gauge. An access path for manual movement of material into and out of the creek will be created adjacent to the staging area, and a crane will be used to lower heavy machinery into the creek and remove any of the demolished concrete. Here will be poured using a quick set concrete. Work on the south bank will also be done to ensure that the riprap slope is keyed properly into the channel bed. So specific construction activities of the project include establishing access and equipment staging areas, installing best management practices for stormwater management, installing diversion equipment, clearing and grubbing of the site, removing debris, demolishing weir concrete, soil, building forms and pouring concrete to build concrete weir and grade control, and rehabilitation site. Given that this project is funded through a state grant, there will be thorough pre- and post-construction monitoring and reporting. Construction is tentatively anticipated to begin in either June or July of next year. So the main issues discussed during the Staff Advisory Committee meeting included generator and construction noise, sufficient neighborhood notification, impacts to biological resources, adequate stormwater control measures, and then creek water bypass details. So regarding noise impacts, to continuously pump creek water out of the work area for 24 hours per day for a period of about 3 weeks. To reduce noise impacts to the surrounding areas will be used around the generator to ensure that the noise levels do not exceed 45 decibels as required by the city's municipal code. Construction activities are additionally restricted to 8 to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, and no construction is allowed on either Saturday or Sunday. To ensure that the neighborhood is adequately notified, the applicant is conditioned to inform all neighbors located within a 500-foot radius about the project schedule at least 30 days prior to any earth-moving activities. Concerning permitting requirements, all required state and federal agency permits have been obtained except for the stream bed alteration permit. The project is conditioned to obtain all necessary agency permits prior to commencing any earth-moving activities. Impacts to biological resources will be minimal. No trees will be removed, and any removal of riparian vegetation will be replaced. Again, mitigation monitoring will occur throughout project construction to protect any potential threatened or endangered plant or animal species. All stormwater control measures will be in place throughout project construction, and the applicant is required to provide additional information on pumping requirements, hours of operation, who to call with noise complaints, and the size of the pump. So in conclusion, staff recommends that the Planning Commission adopt a resolution approving the conditional use permit for the stream gauge modification project. Because the mitigated negative declaration was prepared and adopted through the Fisheries Restoration Grant Program, no additional environmental review is required. So that concludes staff presentation. We have to answer questions, and the applicant is also in the audience to answer questions. Thank you.
Peter, my fellow commissioner.
Do either of my fellow commissioners have questions for staff on this?
I do. On page 4, all my questions are kind of related to environmental, biology, that sort of thing. 1, 2, 3, 4, the fifth bullet down on impacts to biological resources. It said see exhibit, and then there was no exhibit letter filled in. So I was kind of hunting around trying to figure out what exhibit I was supposed to refer to. And I'm assuming it was the State of California Exhibit C, but I'm not sure, because in there's like boilerplate information on protection of species.
That is the one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Question is, has there been a biologist already or an environmentalist that was write a report, or is it just these boilerplate things from Fish and Game regarding the potential resources that are
there? There's both the boilerplate for the grant had to include all of the grant recipients up and down the state. So it covers a lot of information, and it's only the information that is pertinent to this particular project that apply, but there have been numerous technical studies done for this project. I didn't include absolutely everything because it's information. But I, you know, any technical questions, I would ask the applicant.
Okay. Well, obviously you're not the expert, but from what I could tell, it's like they just kept on listing more and more possible species of plants and animals that could be affected. But do we know? Was anything discovered? And I'll bring that up to the applicant. Maybe she can.
Sandra Vichka, I work for Central Coast Salmon Enhancement. I'm not a biologist, I'm a hydrologist, but we work with lots of biologists. And so the of looking for their nests. We know that between downtown and the weir, there's about 8 nests of these steelhead trout where they lay their eggs in the gravel. And we have a qualified biologist that's been approved by the state and by the federal U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, or excuse me, by NIMS. Construction site. The other major species of concern in that area that has been identified is the California red-legged frog, and we also have a qualified biologist from a local consulting firm, Terra Verde, coming in, and they'll capture construction and move them. And there are no plants that I know of special concern, and so all the species that have been identified as special concern will be moved before construction. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Well, she's standing right here in front of us.
Sure. The concrete that's being removed, was that originally a weir pad over time? Or
it was built in 1939, I believe, by the U.S. Geological Survey, and they built these kinds of weirs to monitor flow up and down the state. And then the county actually owns and operates the weir. And over time, the creek kind of cut down, and as you saw in the picture, it created a drop that's too big for our steelhead to jump over. In fact, our nonprofit office is right next to the weir, and we watch the little juveniles fish jump and hit their heads and fall back into the pool. So we really literally watch this thing being an impediment to that species. And so then the county, it's an active weir, and so we'll break it out so there's only a 6-inch jump, and then we'll re-pour the weir and replace all the flow gauge equipment and operational flow gauge for the county.
So my question is, if that was originally a weir done out of concrete originally, that sort of thing over time made the jump too high?
Yeah, it's... And so it's incising or cutting down. And so
I just ask a question because it helps clarify
sure.
for people who might be watching and
yeah.
looking. So could this possibly need to be redone again in another 10 or 15 years? Or is this a superior design in your mind?
No, we could have but again, this was built in 1939, so we could have this problem again if the creek continues to cut down.
One of the things I think I've seen in the past is where they actually have, like, locking mechanisms made out of steel or something like that, or sections that could be removed over time that keeps dropping the height down and down and down and down.
That's cool. I know that the concrete has to be a specific shape so that the relationship between the flow and the water height remains the same, so that the period of record for the flow, so there's some continuity in how it's measured. So we defer to the county in specific. I don't know whether that kind of design would be a possibility. Sounds intriguing, though.
Thank you.
Sure. I just wanted clarification as to, on that public notification letter, how long the concerns last, and then where a staging area is for the heavy equipment. I'm just trying to avoid, you know, half a dozen people calling the agency wanting to know, you know, we're tired of this noise. But if it's from the public notification letter that they get, it'll have, you know, answered that question before it becomes an issue.
Okay, so if I understand you correctly, you would like for the letter that goes out 30 days before construction to include where the staging area is. And it may already be in there. I'll double check. We did send out one letter. We held one public meeting, and we went around the neighborhood and invited people with a door hanger as well as a letter to the meeting. So, but we will do it again 30 days before construction, and I'll make sure that information is in there.
I'm just, you know, aware that general population's not going to pay out in the letter where
sure.
the staging area is the time frame of which, you know, is it going to be 3 months or 6 months or how long it's going to take so that they have that up front so they're aware of it.
Yes, it'll only be 2 to 3 weeks, and I will include that in the letter. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Any other questions to make at this point? Seeing none and hearing none, we'll bring it back to the commission for the hear a motion to
Commissioner Martin, you might want to open it up.
Oh, I'm sorry. Public. Open up to public. Is there anyone from the public that would like to speak on this matter? Seeing none, thank you for the reminder. Seeing none, then I will. Any other final comments we make before we take a vote? Commissioner Mack?
I think all the issues have been addressed and exhausted in all the review agencies that have put quite a involved technical specification together for the project. Thanks staff for also including some conditions of approval for sound control on the generator, because that is definitely a concern, especially if it needs to be running for 20 days. So I think that was a good catch. But I have no other comments other than to entertain a motion.
Commissioner Fowler?
I agree. I'm good with that.
Make a recommendation that we adopt the resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Rio Grande approving conditional use permit number 15-001 to implement a stream gauge fish passage improvement project for property located within Rio Grande Creek in the proximity to Clarence Avenue and Myrtle Drive. APN number is 007-572-029 and 007-572-029. Applied for by Central Coast Salmon Enhancement, Inc.
And I'll second it.
Hearing a motion and a second, can we take a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Yes.
And Commissioner Martin?
Yes. Okay, that's taken care of. 8B, we've already dealt with. The next item on the agenda, non-public hearing items. I see none. None?
Excuse me, none this evening.
That's fine, thank you. The next item is just a notice of 1st, 2015. I can see that there is just one case, a case number architectural 15-006. It works at the address is 504 Ide Street, and this was just a minor facade renovation, and it was approved. Any kind of comments from staff on this? Alrighty. That's taken care of. Any commissioner communications or comments?
I have a few. Way back in February, we were talking as a commission and talking to staff about a couple things. And one thing I wanted to bring up is parking standards. Is there anything being done currently in the city to update our parking standards and being more current with the time and assessing different uses and new types of vehicles?
There's a no current citywide parking study being conducted at this time. However, I would say one of the main issues when we get to roll out the East Grand Avenue master. We did put out an RFP for that work a couple months ago and got a very poor response from consulting agencies. So we're taking a look at that RFP. Consultants, and it appears that we just hit a very busy time and we had a short turnaround time indicated. So we're going to attempt that again. And as part of that, we'll bring back to you once we get that scoped out. But that in that project, parking because it's a downtown master plan, and parking, of course, will control or be an important factor for the development of the downtown on East Grand Avenue. So in that light, yes, we'll be looking at work program at this time as regards parking.
So we kind of defer to a project to help use their necessarily get a consultant just to look at our land use ordinance and parking standards throughout the entire document.
No, we don't have that budgeted at this time. However, you know, I would anticipate some of these issues to be fleshed out in that other.
I have one more issue, and mainly this issue stems from not only neighbors but people of the community keeping asking me questions that I can't answer because we're not city council that make policy. And the issue that I hear over and over again is, you know, with the drought, it has to deal with the water. We're being asked to save, asked to cut. Why is it that we're allowing more homes to be built when, in essence, we're in a drought and the existing homes can't use their full allotment? Is there any recommendations we can pass on to the council to make this known and to pass it on to city council that they don't think it's fair? They want the ability to use the water that they're entitled to before we allow further residential development to continue.
Yes, very good question. We have heard this as ourselves as well, and the council has brought up certainly the issue of we've had, you know, several water-related items go to our city council. We are in a current water restriction phase right now. We have been very aggressive in our water conservation efforts, and this is, of course, but it is also kind of a long-term cyclical drought-related issue. And so in terms of, in terms of our conservation efforts by our community members, we are doing very well. Our mandate from the state was 28%, and we have, as of our last reporting period, met and exceeded that. We are around 32 to 34% in terms of our reduction. Related to several factors, drought awareness, our marketing campaign, and our incentive programs that we run through the city for water. Retrofits, our smart irrigation controllers, etc. So we have, I'll attempt to answer your question. I'd like to step back and just remind ourselves that our conservation efforts started a long time ago. We were very, you know, we're one of the first. Retrofits hard, retrofit upon sale, etc. And in more recent years, we have targeted conservation as a very important means to extending city water supply. In fact, even though we're spending money on water conservation programs, it is certainly cheaper per acre foot than going out and buying more and more. So in that regard, it's an ethic that the council has embraced. Have to purchase other means of water supply. It also allows us to ensure that we're more sustainable in the supplies we have. We are water. as well as groundwater, and we have not been pumping our groundwater entitlement for some time now, making sure that and sea water in because of our proximity to the coast, that we're not aggravating that situation by pumping more than we need to. And as regards our intended water use, long-term build-out of the city, and we are looking at the per capita water use and in that projection. And we want to make sure that our water and supply is balanced over time. And when we look at new development, we're looking at that new development as part of their agreed upon general plan build out scenario. So the water for that development has been secured in our anticipated build out under our existing general plan. And so we are allowing that to continue. As currently projected and approved in our general plan, although we are very careful now, certainly we're watching water use. We're particular in our conditions for water efficiency, for example. We'll be implementing state mandates, no matter what your situation is, as they can roll down from the governor. In terms of what is expected for the whole state, too, in terms of water cutbacks. We're anticipating some more turf restrictions to be required, and that is, you know, those are coming straight from the state. But in terms of our conservation ethics, certainly it's very expensive to store water, to treat the water, to pump the water, to deliver the water, to monitor the water, to check the water quality, et cetera, and we want to make sure that in terms of efficiencies for this particular resource, we are very aggressive in terms of getting the word out that conservation is very important, a part of that equation, both from monetary issues and budgetary issues, as well as conservation ethic as a whole. So that's why we are continuing, allowing so far, continuing to accept development applications. Again, those applications that aren't asking for additional water above and beyond our build out as prescribed in our general plan. However, this drought is serious enough that it could come to the point where we would be recommending a slowdown, and that we have not heard that yet from the City Council. We're not recommending that yet. The Council receives a water update now every month on their Council agendas. It tells exactly what water we're using and what water supply, our water supply situation is, and so we are monitoring that very carefully.
So a couple questions. As you explain, as these projects come online, they've already been looked at in the master plan of the water picture and allocations for that. But the state doesn't recognize that as being a saving used. What I see being difficult is, as we prove these projects, there's further in the hole in terms of showing the state we have savings when we bring another project on. And it's been commented to me more than, I'd say, a dozen times now that you guys are a proven project. And I'm having to use less water as a result. In all fairness, that's an
yes, that's we do have water restrictions, and we are not in a moratorium. That's true, and I would just probably observe that amount of water that's being like we're approving a lot of things, but in the big picture, we're not in the big long-term picture of build out. It is a small amount, and the amount gave through primarily, you know, gross overwatering of landscape is being, the bulk of our water savings is really being achieved in that regard. We so appreciate all the community members taking the, it is extremely important. So I didn't want to, you know, minimize at all the very serious efforts, and we hear about amazing water champions daily at our city hall, that we're approving is a very small amount of our water supply, and in addressing efficient plumbing, efficient water use, we're saving a lot of water.
I just had one question. Has the retrofit program for replacing your lawn, are they out of funds for that?
Very successful. It's been more successful than we originally anticipated. A lot of people have been taking advantage of that. We did receive additional budget from City Council at the last meeting. However, it will depend on how rapid the applications continue to come in, but it will end. The program will end at some time in the next few months, and it was very successful, but we just are running out of money to continue the project.
Piggyback on what Commissioner Mack was saying about parking, but I've got some concerns that go into more of the residential development area rather than some of this commercial in the Grand Avenue. Parking numbers and calculations are within the city standard, but you just look at it and kind of common sense says, gee, there's going to be a lot of people with these projects coming in with narrow streets where there's no parking really allowed on the streets, and the only off-site parking is in designated parking spaces. To me, from a common sense, it just seems like we're really underparked, and it's tough for us because we don't have legislative ability to sit there and say, gee, I think you're underparked, but you're within city guidelines, and so at some level our hands are tied because we may have some legitimate concerns about saying, yeah, but I'm in compliance with all the city regulations. And so I think that's the point that I would make in the encouragement. I'm going to certainly call on a couple of my city councilmen that I know, but I think that's the kind of the question that I'm hearing and the recommendation that I would be making is that, you know, we're building more intense housing and having an expectation of less jamming us up a little bit, so I'd like to see that addressed at some point in time.
Might I inquire, do you see the parking issue primarily in the higher density housing projects or in any single family residential housing project?
For me, it's more in these newer projects that are coming along, the one that is being continued, and I don't want to start discussing it specifically because it's not really on the agenda, but that's not the only one. We had another one where you've got this, you know, meandering residential street, and there was an awful lot of discussion about, you know, parking and garages and how many cars are allocated to the driveway and how big are the driveways. You can go to that, I think it's at, I'm not sure exactly, is it Maple Center or whatever it is there off of Woodland, there kind of behind the hospital. Yeah, you look at that development, and, you know, I live there in the driveways in front of the garage, but for a single car to be parked there. On most evenings, there's probably half a dozen to over a dozen vehicles of the homeowners that are parked out there on that short section of Woodland. Anybody that has any kind of social event in there, virtually 100% of the visitors are parking out on the street and really gets impacted. And my concern is, I mean, gee, I understand that the lots are getting smaller, and not that the houses are getting larger, but, you know, in a traditional single-family residential neighborhood, there's parking on the streets are narrower, and, you know, the city's coming around and saying, well, you're not allowed to park because we need emergency access. You know, if you've got two spaces in your garage, you better keep your garage clean because both your vehicles better be inside your garage because they're not going to fit outside your garage. And if you have a friend that's coming to visit, they better be able to, but if they're going to come to visit you and things of that nature. And it's just from a general standpoint, I look at it and I can, you know, I just kind of look at it and go, oh, this is underparked. Oh, this is underparked. Oh, this is underparked. And as we design more intensive residential neighborhoods, certainly I think at some point we want to encourage more efficient use of automobiles, but welcome to California. The automobile is a part of our culture and is not going away. And other than us having to beat our heads time and time again.
I'll throw a couple other tangible examples out, is the People Self-Help Project. I don't know how many cars, maybe they're allowed to have one per unit or whatever, but what you're starting to see is several cars are starting to park down Cortland. And the Berry Gardens neighbors are going, why are these people's cars parked in front of my home? Doesn't the project have enough parking? Another thing, did Figueroa Mountain, you know, have enough parking? They had so many parking stalls. There's 2 to 3 times more cars being parked there because it is so busy and so successful that it's taken up over half of Smart and Final's parking lot and the parking between that and the bank. So it's to be held by the applicant saying, well, it meets city standards. And we know that it doesn't work. And a vehicle that would be helpful for, I think, the Planning Commission is to do a parking survey of similar uses in town and what are how many cars are being parked at those areas and have to bring that in. If we can't afford the consultant to actually bring our standards up to current use. Because we're seeing a restaurant, another restaurant, but between their peak hours of parking lots full, they're over their allocation of parking, and they're parking along El Camino, along the chain link fence of the off-ramp for the freeway, for about 30 to 40 cars long. Restaurants have a very high intense use for parking, and it gets overlooked over and over and over again. And we're told, well, it meets is whether it's Applebee's or Chili's or Vons or whatever, they recognize that the parking standards that the cities have are underutilized more, to the tune of sometimes 50% more than what the city requires in order for that establishment to go in. Because 9 times out of 10, a customer will come to an establishment, they can't find parking, they go to the next place. They can't find parking at Burger King, they'll go to Jack in the Box, or vice versa. And if we're going to, as a city, not allow our tourists and community to park at these establishments, we're doing them a disservice. And the tools here to be able to require the projects before us to adequately park them for the intended use.
Okay, thank you. I'll certainly take that under advisement and try to, you know, the master plan project and maybe an extension of that or as a separate item. It is something, of course, we hear about in many project reviews, and it is C policies in housing, economic development, and you know, other land use considerations. So, but it is integral and it ties into a lot of different areas. So, thank you for your expressing those concerns and those good examples, and we'll certainly try to take a look at that.
Thank you very much. And in the interest of full disclosure, Commissioner Mack and I did not talk before the meeting and discuss any of this. I was completely surprised. He opened his mouth before I had a chance to open mine on this particular item. I think we beat that to death enough for this evening. Finally, any other staff comments or communications for the meeting tonight?
Just that we have a tentative date for Bridge Street Bridge stakeholders meeting coming up at the end of the month.
August.
End of the month. And we'll certainly keep you advised on that project going forward.
Very good.
No other staff comment.
Do we have to take a motion to adjourn, or I just declare it adjourned? Adjourned.